What? You know, that's great that you can't hear me. I'll put myself on mute.
All right. All right, all right, all right. Welcome to the Pixel Punishers podcast, episode 9, almost to the double digits. I am Tony Roseland. Across from me, as always, our producer, Mr. Chase Warnick. What's happening, man?
Not a whole lot, man.
And in the country where people dig through dumpsters to find babies, only to find out that they are the father of said babies, Mr. Barry McKenzie, what's going on, man?
What are you talking about, man?
Fun facts about Canada. In 2010, a Canadian man rescued a newborn baby from a dumpster, only to find out he was the father.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I guess him and his girl weren't getting along, or maybe he forgot that he threw his baby away. But either way, that's a fun fact about Canada that you didn't know.
I knew it. Like, the only fun fact I know is there's like 2.5 million caribou in Canada. I didn't know about dumpster diving.
Well, babies, now you must be really proud.
Proud to be Canadian.
Yeah. All right. Well, also on the line with us, we have Mr. Flurn himself, Aaron Nace. What is going on, man?
Not much. Hanging out. Good to be hanging out with you guys.
Am I saying it right? Is it Flurn or is it Plurn? Plurn?
We have had many different attempts at pronouncing it. It's Flurn. Yeah. It's like photography learn.
Gotcha.
Yeah, like learn.
Well, you've come a long way, baby. I remember back in the day when it was just you doing your thing, and then you started hiring on staff, and now you got I don't know, half the world watching everything that you do. So congrats on all the success, man. It's awesome to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. I'm glad to be here, glad to be hanging out.
So we had quite a few questions come in for you. We've got a topic for today.
Great.
We'll talk about that stuff, but first, let's find out what's going on with the group here. Chase, what happened? You're back from your trip with Jed, mm-hmm. traveling around. Anything? Did you do any hang gliding? Did you do any base jumping?
No, I didn't. No, but it was a fun 8-day road trip shoot. It was a bunch of people. There were 8 people total that were there the entire 8 days, and then another 5 or 6 that were filtering out from the creative agency and the client company. So
gotcha. Did you would you guys sleep in a tent?
No, we booked it up at hotel rooms every night, which was nice, except for when we were in Spokane. I got to crash at home for 2 nights.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, back to editing.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Cool. Barry, what's happening with you, man? What happened with you this past week?
Just a whole lot of editing. That's it. I edited, and then I forgot to super zoom pizza, and my DMs blew up. And that's like the summary of my week, man.
Yeah, people will call you out on that shit these days, man. You don't super zoom the pizza.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's like, well, people look forward to that content. It's hard to put that kind of high quality content out on a consistent basis.
Oh, I know. Flurn ain't got nothing on you for sure with those pizza super zooms. Yeah. I hear you. Well, I just got back tonight. I came straight from Seattle right into the studio here in Spokane. I had to run over. We had to drive over there and then drive all the way back. There was a bunch of accidents. It took us like 6 hours each way. My wife ran a marathon this morning. But our main goal for the trip was to take a cooler over so that we could bring all the breast milk home that she's been pumping over there. Yeah, they're turning off the electricity in our flat there in Seattle for like, I don't know, half a day or something next week. And she was worried that all the breast milk would spoil. So
for half a day?
Yeah, it's like liquid gold, man. It's like, she didn't want to take the chance.
I understand it's liquid gold, but yeah. I mean, let's be honest, this shit's free. It just
them divorce words, man. That's,
you just have to extract it. You just have to extract it, and it's free otherwise.
Oh, I don't know. Dude, come on. Dude, does your wife, did she get mad at you when you left, like when you poured a bottle for the babies and left the colostrum or whatever it is inside the bottle? And
oh, yeah.
Or
yeah,
did you not get caught?
It's a no.
Well, yeah, you just try not to get caught.
I rinse the bottles out quickly so that she doesn't see the evidence left behind. If there's like any left behind, I don't want to get scolded for that stuff. I don't want to sleep in a garage.
My kid's 5 and we probably still have a bag of milk in the freezer.
Dude, we have so much. She's going to donate it. We have so much milk. So
Do they accept donations for
for Stranger's Breast Milk? Yeah, I mean, they make sure she's not like a crack whore or something first, and then they'll take the donation. But
does a crack whore have a lower quality breast milk? Do you think?
Yeah, it's grade C compared to grade A.
So maybe they only give that to the grade C babies. Yeah, crack the babies. Ones you find in dumpsters in Canada. Maybe those would qualify. So welcome to the podcast, Aaron.
All right.
If you weren't aware, you are now.
Initiated.
Yeah, this thing goes sideways quick sometimes, but it's fun though. What's been going on with you, man? What's happening in Chicago?
Well, I just got back from Mexico.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of time off to do absolutely nothing, which was
best thing to do in Mexico.
Where'd you go in Mexico?
I was near Puerto Vallarta. It's like on the west coast. Yeah. So I flew into Puerto Vallarta, and then I was in this super small town, Jalapa.
Oh, that's the best place, man. I love that place.
Oh, no shit. You've been to Jalapa?
I've been there a couple times, yeah.
It's super chill. There's no cars, because it's like basically there's no road to Jalapa. You just got to take a boat to get there. Yeah, so it's like people legit still use like horses and donkeys to get around and like haul stuff. The like biggest mode of transportation they have in Jalapa is a four-wheeler. Mm-hmm. And that pretty much takes the whole road. That's, you know, it's like they don't have like a real road, like no use for like a car width road because there's no cars. So like there's basically just a footpath and then four-wheelers that, you know, zoom by the footpath every now and then, and everyone's got to get out of the way.
Yeah.
did you take a cruise down there or what?
No, I just flew down. Oh, okay. It was a solo vacation, which it's my first solo vacation, in quite a while. I've traveled, you know, for work alone a decent bit. You know, I'll just be like me popping up in a city and, you know, doing whatever.
Seattle. I've run into you walking down the streets of Seattle before and been like, who's this guy trying to give me a hug? Get away from me.
It's me, Tony. Hug me.
Yeah.
So it was a really, really fun trip. Basically just a chance to kind of like unplug and, you know, kind of get to the place. You know, we all work pretty much nonstop. So, it was good to kind of like get a little bit of a reset and kind of like get back to base level. Like, what am I doing with my life? Kind of deal.
Aaron, what do you do when you go on a vacation like that? Do you preload content to be released, or do you just guys go dark for like a week, or how do you handle that stuff?
No, we do not go dark. Yeah, no, I mean it basically involves working extra hard right before and then right after. Mm. So we're, that's the like wacky thing about being a content producer and going on vacation. It's just like, it's like, okay, a vacation is like supposed to like be less stress in your life. But like, in order to take that vacation, you just have to inject like a shitload more stress into your life on the, you know, front and back end. So, but we have a fantastic team here. And, you know, they basically just take care of everything while I'm gone. So I couldn't be luckier. I basically just, you know, sit in front of the camera, boop, boop, boop on Photoshop, and they take care of everything else. So, super, super lucky.
Well, I know I had to go through a full interview and background check just to book the podcast with you, with your people. So, and I don't have people.
Did you get a urine sample and everything?
Yeah, dude, I had to go through the whole thing. So
I had to taste your urine sample. That's the prerequisite.
Nah, you're fitting right into the podcast.
I figured.
So, hey, just out of curiosity, for my own curiosity, how far ahead are you usually on the content that you're releasing? Do you have a bunch of stuff already in the can, and how far ahead are you typically on stuff like that?
Good question. It really depends on kind of where we're at, you know, like, so... for those of you who may not know, I teach Photoshop primarily online. We've got a YouTube channel, and then we've got a subscription platform on our website. And on our YouTube channel, we release one episode a week teaching free Photoshop, photography, Lightroom, you know, tips, tricks, things like that. And we've done that for the last 8 years straight, at least one episode per week.
Wow.
So that's, you know, rain or shine, that's coming out, whether I'm, you know, here, away, whatever it is. So our free episodes, typically I'll record those kind of like in bulk, like try to get like, you know, on a good day, I can get 3 free tutorials recorded.
Nice.
That usually requires like an entire day before of planning and kind of working everything out. But that way that takes us for 3 weeks. So yeah. It really depends. You know, we have a fantastic team that just does such a good job with like scheduling out the content and making sure that we're on top of everything. Cause I'm, you know, I'm just kind of like all over the place, but they're like, okay, Aaron, this is what's coming up in the schedule. On Monday, we need you to record 2 episodes and then it'll take us through the next couple weeks. You know, sometimes we're, you know, 4, 5, 6 episodes in the bag just waiting to be released. And then I spend my time focusing on our pro material for our subscribers on the website. So I'll focus on that for a few weeks and then kind of like jump back in. But it depends, you know, it just depends on the schedule. Sometimes we're releasing an episode Tuesday and I'm recording it Monday afternoon. And then other times we're, you know, a month and a half ahead of time. It's, you know, obviously always the goal to be ahead of time, but you know, it's not always super realistic.
Nope. I get that.
How do you guys usually come up with the topics? Is it like more driven by the community or do you sort of come up with the content, what you're going to cover?
Yeah, good question. So we, you know, from a variety of different places, a lot of the stuff we, I'll tell you, we, we have a lot of, I mean, we've been making Photoshop tutorials, you know, for 8 years. We've released over 800 of them on YouTube. So it's like, at a certain point, it's like, how do we come up with new ideas?
Yeah.
But it's really a mix. So part of it is just pure, like, you know, SEO research, which basically involves, like, you know, looking at keywords and finding out what people are actually searching for on the internet. You know, that's like, it's like the analytics side of it. A lot of it comes from user suggestions. Things come from in-person workshops, things through customer service, new features, new releases, comments on any of our social media platforms. And then other times it's just something that I find relatively interesting, or I'll find a new interesting way of doing something and base the content on that. So it's really a big mix. There's no formula. It's just, you know, whatever we can possibly do to come out with new exciting content each and every week.
So
cool.
To play on that, here's 2 questions actually. One is, how important do you think it is, or how much worth do you guys put on getting a video out that pertains to the new features in Photoshop as soon as they're released? And to piggyback that question, are you always using the latest version of Photoshop? Because Barry and I have opinions on this, and probably Chase as well. But what are your thoughts, A, on the latest versions of Photoshop? Do you use them, and how important is it for you to get a video out as soon as new features are released?
Yeah, good question. So I always use the most current version of Photoshop. You know, if I was just an independent artist, I probably wouldn't, you know, probably wouldn't care if I was using a slightly older version. However, being that basically my job is to teach Photoshop, yeah, it makes sense for me to teach the most current version and stay up to date with all the changes. Adobe does a great job with their software. Sometimes there's some hits, sometimes there are misses, but all in all, they do a really good job with the software. I will say that, you know, the updates that come along, for the most part, are relatively minor updates. You know, they'll make slight adjustments to some tools. They'll work a little bit better here and there, things like that. They're doing a lot of things with, like, content aware, you know. Those were some of the big releases over the last few years. But the core tools and features pretty much stay the same. So, you know, whether you're using tools that were available in Photoshop CS6 or, you know, using things that are available, you know, in the most current release, you should be able to get most of what you actually want to get done. Sometimes they just come out with tools that make it a little bit easier. So instead of having to do it the long way, you get to click a couple times and Photoshop kind of figures it out for you.
Yeah. But you're not running.
One of the things that bothers me. Sorry, go ahead, Tony.
No, no, go, Barry. You're probably gonna ask.
Yeah,
the same
one of the things. One of the things that just bothered me with the newest version, and I don't know why. I mean, I get it if something's broke, you know, fix it. But if it's not broke, why bother? Where, you know, the whole Command Z to or Command Z to before and after, and then there's the option Command Z to step backwards. I don't understand why they needed to fiddle with that, or with to redo a filter with Command F. Now it brings up a search window. Like, all those things are so like ingrained into us after using those things for like since like the oldest versions of Photoshop, and then randomly in 2019 they decided that we're gonna throw, you know, a curveball here and make everybody who's been, you know, doing before and after using Command Z, we're gonna switch that up now on them. So it's those things are kind of weird for me. I don't understand why they would do something like that.
Yeah, no, totally. You know, to kind of go along with that, they've changed the functionality of the transform tool as well. So now you don't have to hold shift to maintain aspect ratio when transforming. And, you know, those things really, like, for us, for the people who've been using Photoshop for a long time, it's, it can be pretty frustrating because, it, you know, using these tools gets to a point of, like, muscle memory, mm-hmm. right? Where it's just like, I'm not thinking about what I'm pressing. It's just like my hands are doing the work and, you know, anytime you throw a wrench in that, like mess up my keyboard shortcuts, the muscle memory completely goes away. And that makes it so you can't work as efficiently as you'd like to. And it can be pretty frustrating. I do understand why they do it. It's for new users, you know, like it would have made sense actually if let's say the transform tool did maintain aspect ratio by default since the beginning. I actually do think that would have made sense. Most programs maintain aspect ratio by default, and then you have to hold shift to break that aspect ratio. So I do think that they're, you know, definitely tailoring all these changes towards new users. Where I think they kind of missed the mark a little bit, in my opinion, is not giving us the option to have this be like legacy, know what I mean? Like for us people who have been using these programs for years and years and years, it's like, I totally get it. This is actually like a pretty decent thing for new users. But when you roll out these updates, it would be nice for those of us who've been using these tools for years to just, you know, say, no, thank you. I'll keep it the way I've had it. So I don't get frustrated every time I try to transform something.
And, you know, a lot of the reason, like the transform tool and the undo command, things like that, they're bringing those to be conforming with their other apps, like Illustrator and things that have been doing that for so long. So, you know, now they all function the same way, which has been a complaint that people have had that use multiple Adobe apps, that they have a difference between one to the next. So what you say makes sense, where they do this, and to the old schoolers, yeah, it's a little bit jarring, but to new people, now the whole suite is the same, no matter which app you're in. So I can understand that. That does make sense. You know, the legacy thing, Apple did that when they came out with the natural scroll on the OS, remember? But they gave you the option to go back and deselect that if you didn't want that. Yeah. You could do like on an iPhone or whatever. So it would have been cool if they gave you a workspace or a keyboard set or whatever to be able to use it as a legacy. But maybe that's a keyboard shortcut menu that Flurn wants to put out to their users, the legacy Photoshop. It puts everything back the way it was. I don't know.
Yeah, well, the whole, you mentioned, you know, option Command Z versus Command Z, that is something you can change back in the keyboard shortcuts, thankfully. Shift being, you know, the way the transform tool has been changed, unfortunately, you cannot change that back. But
I kind of like that, though. Mm-hmm. I like the new part.
I do, too.
Yeah.
You like the new transform?
Yeah, I do, too.
Oh, right on. Yeah. For me, it's...
How do you do it, Aaron? Do you leave it as Adobe has intended, or do you go back and revert some of these things to the way they used to be?
I revert everything I possibly can.
Old dog, new tricks. I got you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like such a keyboard shortcut. Like everything I can possibly do in a shortcut, I will do. And a lot of that comes with the fact that, you know, I'm trying to teach Photoshop... you know, create meaningful content on YouTube. And really, if you're making a video over 10 minutes long, you're going to get quite a bit of fall off. So I need to get a lot done in 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that means I'm relying on these keyboard shortcuts to do things that, you know, most users don't mind going to, like, you know, edit crop, but I'll create my own keyboard shortcut for crop because there is none for input, for instance, you know, or Gaussian blur. Like, most users don't mind going to, like, filter, blur, Gaussian blur, but I'm like option shift command G, you know, because I'm trying to get a lot done in a little bit of time. And so everyone's got their own workflow, you know, and I think as Adobe continues to make releases, hopefully they'll just you know, offer us the ability to give us these legacy options back. And they actually have done that in the past where they've like taken away a feature and then they've gone back and like added it back again. They're like, "Ooh, that pissed everyone off. Let's not do that.
Well, and the cool thing that they do right now, even with the Creative Cloud, is that they do give you the option to roll back a few versions. So if you install something, and this is where my complaint comes in, I think Barry's as well, is that when you install the latest version, it seems to fuck things up, man. You end up with laggy healing brushes or, you know, lens correction tools or whatever. And you're like, oh man, this was working fine yesterday. I installed the update and now everything's all screwed up. So you got to roll back a version. Is that stuff? And that's why I asked about you using the latest versions. Is this stuff that you encounter or does that not bother you? Or because you're not doing it for client work where it's detrimental that, I mean, you have time to kind of go through and figure it out? Or, I mean, what's your take on that? Have you had experienced this at all with any of their updates or no?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it seems like, you know, anytime a piece of software updates, there are going to be bugs and takes them a little bit of time to kind of work those out. And they are super frustrating. It can be super annoying, but, you know, I do think there's value in, I mean, especially for like my position, like I should be teaching people the newest features using the newest versions, right? It's like my content will be out of, no matter what I do, my content is going to be out of date someday, right? Like, I don't want that day to come sooner rather than later.
Although, like, I still use your Wacom setup video every time I buy a new Wacom because I can never remember how to set the shit up. So I always go back and watch Aaron's Wacom.
You gotta save that shit to the cloud, dude.
I know, man. Well, I do now, but it still, sometimes I forget or I don't have an internet connection. I'm trying to set the thing up and I'm like, oh, damn it. I wish I could get on Florin and watch that thing.
Yeah, I'll have to let you know.
I think I watched that
when
that
I
video.
First started using a Wacom. Yeah, when I first started using a Wacom, I watched that video, and I remember you. I think that you were maybe sitting at your kitchen table or something, and you were saying, or maybe you were at the studio. I don't remember, but anyways, you said that if your house burnt down before you went and bought any clothes or anything, you'd go buy a new Wacom. And I was like, damn, I should probably learn how to use this thing. So I put the bar of soap away like 6-7 years ago and haven't looked back.
Oh, right on. You're a Wacom user. Yeah, good. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
it works for you. You enjoy using it.
Oh, it's the greatest. You should see the sweet spot on my Wacom. It's slippery. Yeah,
that little index card size slick. Yeah.
He loves stroking the path with that thing.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to stroke the path.
Yeah. So one of the questions actually
mine. Looks like really old stairs, you know, that people have been walking on for like 1,000 years.
One of the questions that we got was who would win in a pin tool battle, Aaron or Barry? And Barry loves the pin tool. So I don't know, Aaron, do you use the pin tool on a daily basis? Is this a tool that you're go-to anytime you need to make a path for something? Or are you
For sure. I mean, not a daily basis because I don't cut things out on a daily basis, but I use the pen tool quite a bit. And I really enjoy the tool. We should do a Photoshop battle.
Yeah, that would be cool. We'll have to do that next time we're all in the same place. We'll video it and we can do it like the Facebook intern challenge where you take a shot and you got to cut a path. You take another shot. Every time you put down a node, you got to take a shot, right? And see who's still standing. You put down the least number of nodes that way. That would be interesting.
Yeah. I'm a lightweight. I'm pretty sure I would lose this challenge.
So on the Wacom topic, they just finally released their updated small Wacom tablet, which is on par with their previously released medium and large, right?
And
And
yeah, I believe so. I'm looking it up right now.
They're basically the same. So I've got it. I just got it like, what, 2 weeks ago when we were down in Arizona? Yeah. So I just ordered it. So they updated their medium and their large a long time ago. They never updated the small. It stayed the same. But they finally updated the small like 2 weeks ago and released it. And it looks and works just like the medium and the large now, but it's actually smaller. So their current medium is the same size as the old small. And the new small is even smaller than all of them. The new small is like the size of a paperback book. It's really cool.
Nice.
Yeah, it's nice for being on the go and portable. And I remember when you and I, funny story, I'm walking down the street in Seattle with my wife and kid. And I hadn't seen Aaron for a while. And I guess you were in town for Creative Live or something. Mm-hmm. And walking down the sidewalk. And this guy with long hair and a beard starts walking up to us with his arms out like he wants to give me a hug. And I'm like, who the fuck is this? Get this guy away from me. What? And I'm like shielding my kid, my wife from this stranger, this weirdo coming up to me. And then he goes, Tony, it's Aaron. And I hadn't seen you since you grew your hair out and grew a beard. So I had no idea who it was. But anyway, we ended up hanging out that night and grabbed beers. And I started asking Aaron questions. We're like in the hotel lobby or something. And he whips out his Wacom tablet out of his backpack and his laptop. And he starts showing me how to edit shit for like the questions I had for him. And then he ended up using it, I think, some of the images the next day on Creative Live, but it was funny as hell. He's like, this guy goes nowhere without his Wacom tablet. So, but
yeah, man,
have you ever tried any other tablets, or has it always been Wacom for you?
I mean, I've tried a bunch of like Wacom tablets, but
the Cintiq displays.
Tried... Yeah.
I have one of those. Yeah. Wacom's, I mean, they're super cool. They send us a bunch of stuff, which is like, thanks guys. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's just like, am I getting old? Cause like the tablet that I use is like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 years old. Mm-hmm. But I have like a closet full of new ones.
Well,
everyone I work with is like, you going to try the new one? You going to try this like awesome Cintiq? And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, like, I don't know. I'm not proud of it. I don't think it's a good thing that I'm just like, you know.
Try the new small, like, the new Wacom Intuos Pro Small that just came out. I'm sure they probably sent you one by now, but try it or whatever size you want. But I think you'll love it, man. They feel way different. Wouldn't you say, Barry? Don't they feel...
I don't know, man. I'm the same as Aaron. Like the sweet spot on mine, like you're like, you got to get the new small. And I'm like, it feels cool. But man, this old girl, she's all worn in nice. And like,
she's all loose.
I love it. I swear, unless like it shits the bed, this is going to be the only time I ever own.
You guys are both better Wacom users than I am. So I guess.
Well, I'll give it a try. I'll definitely give it a try, Tony. I'll let you know how it goes. And
back to the question.
They did improve it. It's not the same thing, so they did improve it for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking on the website right now. It's got more pressure sensitivity, et cetera, et cetera.
It just feels different to me. I'm actually okay with it, and I've always been like a retard using the Wacom, you know. But in this one, I do okay with it. So I think they've got it. It's nice and smooth, but. You know, I was more curious if you've ever used any other brands, because I know I get the question all the time, like, what tablet should I buy? And I'm like, I don't know. What else would you buy besides a Wacom? But there are other brands out there.
There are other brands?
Yeah, but I've never used any of them. Have you, Aaron?
You know, I'll tell you. I have one of those iPad Pros that just came out with Apple Pencil.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty into it. It's... not obviously the same thing as a tablet, because it doesn't just like plug into your computer. But I think Apple's done a really good job with the second generation Apple Pencil and the new iPad Pro. Mm-hmm. I'm really impressed with it. But as far as tablets, you just plug into the computer. Wacom's kind of like the industry leader. There are a couple others. Like I think Samsung even makes one or something like that. But it's just one of those things where most people just use the Wacom, and that's really all I've ever used when it comes to that sort of thing.
If you like the iPad Pro editing experience, I was just watching one of MKBHD's videos. He did one on the iPad OS, right?
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
And he said that the latency is cut way down. It's like 9 millisecond latency. He says you can write with the pencil on the new iPad Pro with the latest OS that Apple's getting ready to release, and it's mm-hmm. completely real time. Like, there's zero latency. It's like writing on paper. So that may even be a better experience for editing, you know.
And that with the file management system that's going to come out for you, you're going to be able to plug drives directly into it.
Yeah, and you can use that as a second monitor. So you could potentially treat it like a Cintiq almost, right? Yeah, with the sidecar mm-hmm. feature they're doing. So a lot of cool stuff, man. Technology is rad.
Yeah.
It is cool. You know, I wasn't sure.
I feel like
so
my old ass walk them.
Barry's like, ah, give me a pen and paper and I'm Sharpie.
I'm done. Yeah, no, I mean, I like my old Wacom too. And I was a little bit like, you know, should I get this iPad thing? They're releasing Photoshop for the iPad relatively soon. So I'm like, okay, cool. Well, I definitely need to teach that. So I picked up one of these iPad Pro. I wasn't sure if I'd actually use it, but I got to tell you, I'm super impressed by it. They're just as fast as a high end laptop, but like a mm-hmm. medium end laptop. And I think they've done a great job. And the Apple Pencil totally kicks ass. I do a lot of drawing on mine. Actually, I drew when I was like a kid. And I've gotten back into drawing. So, like, these days I actually do quite a bit of drawing.
What's your go-to app for that?
It's called Procreate.
Yep. I got that one, too. It's rad. I have that on that same iPad Pro with the pen. It's really sweet, man.
It's so good.
Yeah. They've done a great job with that thing. It's fairly intuitive. You pick it up within a few hours, and you know the whole app. It's pretty rad. So.
Before we move on from Wacom, Can we talk about nibs for a second? Because I don't know, I'm still on my original nib.
I'm not.
I have like 635 hours, 1,000 hours on this nib, and I don't know. Are people wearing down their nibs, Aaron?
What fucking nib are you using? I put a brand new one on today, and it's worn out.
Yeah, but man, your sausage links, you got to lighten up on the pressure, dude.
Jesus. Yeah, I think you're squeezing your nib a little too hard, man.
Jesus. I'm still on my first nib, dude, honestly.
I'm on my first one, too. I'm with you. Yeah.
God, you guys have 14-year-old Wacoms and you're on your first nib?
Jesus. Yeah, sure. So, who was it who said their nib was wearing down?
That was Chase.
That was mine.
Chase's nib.
So, Chase, you can adjust your pressure sensitivity in the settings. To where like you can make it so you don't have to press as hard, and that might make the little tip like last a little bit longer, you know, if that's something that's like, oh, I gotta keep buying these things.
Not Tony has to buy them, not me.
I think he's just got heavy hands, that's all.
maybe I'm still on my first one too, like, and I actually like it's worn away a little bit, and I like it the way it is. Like, I don't want to put a new one in there. Like, it has like a little bit of a smoother feel to it.
Does it have a slant? Yeah. Like is it slanted like a marker, felt tip marker,
like
these days?
Ever so slightly. Yeah. Just a little bit.
Mine's got a small slant, maybe. Yeah. Oh, it's lovely. It just fits into that little divot on the pad, man.
Guys are funny.
I agree. Yeah, man. We should get together and just like, I don't know, take a bubble bath with our, Wacom or something.
I wish I had some music to play for that. Like, queued up. That would have been amazing. Oh, man. Maybe we'll do it in post. So, Aaron, funny enough, our topic is today, you know, I mentioned about the future of mobile editing. And so you mentioned that Photoshop is going to be coming out with their iPad version. I mean, I know they have an iPad version now, but it's kind of a half Photoshop thing. So, from what I understand, and all signs point to them coming out with like a full-on Photoshop for the iPad. So you seem to already know a little bit about that. What are your thoughts on actually using that? How viable is that as a mainstream editing device, like an iPad or a some sort of mobile device?
Yeah, you know, good question. I think we're just in the early stages these days. So Photoshop does have they have a beta version out now for like beta testers to test the new Photoshop for the iPad. So I've got that, and I've been, you know, playing around with it and using it. And it's what you would expect from a beta version of a software. Mm-hmm. Like, it's getting there, and the iPad itself is also getting there, but like in a few years, 100%. Yeah. Will you be able to do like professional photo editing on an iPad with mobile software? 100%.
Yeah.
Right now, we're like right at the edge. You know, it's like when like, I don't know. Well, any technology is brand new. It's like, oh, this is really cool, but it's like expensive and kind of works like okay. You know, you wait a couple of versions down the road, and that's really where the sweet spot is.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I think a lot of the things that we're seeing on the desktop version, like the bugs and things like that, are related to the coding that they're doing. My thought is that both like Mac OS and Adobe and all of these things are eventually going to merge into a single OS where you have Mac OS, which runs on the desktop and on their mobile devices, and Adobe, which runs on the desktop and the mobile devices, because the OSs are made for both platforms, you know? So I think everything is going to end up with this melding where it's one piece of software, you know, per company that runs on everything.
Yeah, Catalina, the new OS, is going to be able to run iPhone and iPad apps.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so see, that's the first step right there. And then eventually, mm-hmm. Photoshop is just going to be Photoshop, and it will work whether it's your desktop or your iPad or mm-hmm. whatever. It'll work on both. It'll be the same app, you mm-hmm. know? At least that's my thought. What do you think? Anybody else?
Got? I don't know. Tony, you're very good at reading fortunes, so I'm gonna take your word for it. Do you have a crystal ball that you gaze into?
I use a magic eight ball. It's 60% of the time. It's accurate every time.
You know, as we're sitting here and I'm listening to Aaron Ace's sweet, sweet voice, it reminds me of the night in the Bahamas where we almost got kidnapped, and then I tried to get Aaron to give me his shoes, which he wouldn't do, and then I ended up sleeping on baby beds in the garage.
Yeah, he may not remember that.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
One night we were at Atlantis, and yeah. Tomas wanted to go dancing in the dance club because he was trying to pick up chicks, and I was wearing flip flops, and I think you're right around size 10. Am I right?
Yeah, like 9.5, I would say.
Yeah. See, so I remember looking down at your feet and thinking that I could probably squeeze into those shoes. So I was like, Aaron, I could have those shoes, so I could go in the dance club with Tomas, and it didn't happen. So.
I said no.
Back. Yeah, you said no. I don't know. You weren't into it. I don't know. Maybe you didn't like my flip flops. Yeah, no, it's fine.
I ruined your night. I apologize.
No, I actually had the best night ever because I went back to that to the Airbnb that we were at, and the whole compound was locked down, and I ended up tweaking out in the garage on a couple baby mattresses. So it was
people to kill. Aaron's at the top of Barry's list now. He's
I'm just smearing lipstick on.
That's
right,
right
now.
Oh god, oh man, he doesn't remember at all. I don't remember
that at 0%.
Don't feel bad, Aaron. I was in the house sound asleep. He was banging on the door and I didn't wake up for it to let him in. So
well, the best thing
well,
is
the
that
next
my phone
time we
had
hang
2%.
Out, I'm bringing an extra pair of shoes for sure.
Next time we hang out, it's going to be bubble baths and Wacoms and shoes.
Done. Done.
Amazing.
I'm excited.
Yeah. So should we jump on some of these questions? There was a few up here. Let's see.
First, what does everybody think of the new Mac Pro?
I think
it's like a cheese grater.
Yeah, who cares what it looks like? I think it's rad.
Yeah, what about the price, though?
It's not that bad, dude. $6,000?
For the lowest end.
What's an iMac Pro cost? Aaron, what are you using, man? Are you using an iMac? iMac Pro? What do you got over there at Flurn HQ?
So my personal computer, like day-to-day, is a Mac Pro, like the trash can one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the older version of the one that just came out. And then we just have a whole assortment of other computers around. Mm-hmm. I think the new one looks awesome. I didn't realize they released the pricing. I checked on the website a while ago, and I didn't see any prices on there.
They released the base price. They haven't released any of the configurable prices above the base. Yeah.
My guess is it'll probably get up to, what do you guys think, like 15?
Top of the line,
oh, I'm
40.
I'm guessing 30, yeah, 30 to 40 for top of the line for mm-hmm. sure. 28 core, 1.5 terabytes of memory. And then video cards, you can have, I forget how many video.
You can have two duo cards in there for four video cards at the same time.
Yeah, dude, it's going to be insane what you can put. And SSDs, think of all the SSDs you can drop in that thing. I'm sure they're going to configure it with
PCI.
You can 12 terabytes of SSD or something.
You know? Yeah, yeah, something like that.
So, yeah, it's going to be nuts. I'm sure it's going to be super expensive, but I dig it. I don't think the price is that bad. $6,000 for... for that machine,
I think it's going to be good when like you kind of start getting into the above the 8, so like the 16 or whatever it's going the price is going to level out.
But what's cool is you have the ability to build it however you want, which is something they've taken away from us on the on the iMac Pro. You can't even change the RAM.
No.
The regular iMac you still can. Yeah. But so they're going back to allowing this thing to be modular. And the biggest thing that cracks me up is people are upset about the monitor's stand price. And it's like, what the fuck? This is a reference class monitor that's like $25,000 to $40,000 by any other manufacturer. They're selling it for $5,000 and you're bitching because the stand cost $1,000 if you need a stand.
They did goof on. They should have done the monitor and the stand as one package. Oh, and we'll knock $1,000 off of it if you don't want the stand.
I've heard that theory before. The problem with that is that a lot of pros are already using multiple monitor setups and have arms and things and all kinds of shit mounted to the wall and don't need the stands. Mm-hmm. And those are the biggest probably group that they're marketing this monitor to. Yeah. So they don't need the stand anyway. So they're looking at it going, sweet, I get it for $49.95. Which sounds $1,000 cheaper than the rest of the world, who's never going to buy the fucking thing anyway for an extra $1,000. You know, that's not their target market anyway.
I bet it looks sweet, that monitor.
Oh, I bet it's fucking rad. Amazing. Yeah, it's super cool. We'll probably have one here before too long. Impulse buy.
Yeah. Impulse buy.
It's in the price range.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling cute. Just picked one up.
Yep. So, okay, questions. We have Shag, Mary, Kill with Tony, Barry, and Chase. Go, Aaron.
Oh God! Can I just marry all of you? Is that a thing?
Are we? I'll tell you this: I can do amazing things with my mouth.
Jesus!
I can confirm that.
Like whisper sweet lullaby.
You've already mentioned bubble baths with Barry, so I'm thinking maybe the shag goes to Barry on this.
He's gonna be utilizing that super zoom real nice,
right?
Oh yeah.
All right, so this question I got a lot, Aaron. In fact, I think at least half a dozen times people wrote and said, what is the most underrated or underused Photoshop tool, period?
That gives great results.
The brush tool.
It was written all differently, but yeah. So basically, most underutilized tool in Photoshop. What do you think that is?
Yeah, it's the brush tool.
You want to elaborate?
Well, so a large part of, say you want to cut something out from the background, you're going to use a layer mask to do that, right? And on a layer mask, basically you can paint white to make something visible. You can paint black to make something invisible. And there are all kinds of, fun tools and things like that you can do that with. But at the end of the day, if you're comfortable enough with the brush tool, you can do just about anything you need to with the brush tool. I think what a lot of people kind of miss is that the brush tool has a lot of settings that you can really make just about whatever type of brush you want. I actually made an entire pro tutorial on just the brush tool, and we use the brush tool to completely cut out and recreate any type of hair, curly hair, straight hair, animal hair, fur, whatever you want. If you've ever had any issues cutting a person out, and of course the hardest part of that is always the hair, you can completely recreate a person's hair from scratch using just the brush tool. And I think that is kind of one of the hidden talent,
I remember when you made when you had the best friends tutorial and you made the friggin' panda hairbrush. I was like, damn.
Well, I remember panda hairbrush. The first time I met Aaron, we were in Seattle at Creative Live for, Rob Grimm was out there and, you were doing some editing and you needed a brush with sparklies and you're like, well, we'll just make one. So he makes a brush and he's like, oh, sparklies. Yay. And then I've seen other times you've made brushes for like eyebrows and things. I mean, just all kinds of crazy shit. So it makes sense that would be your answer, I guess. People, I think underestimate what they can do once they learn to create their own brushes and things like that, which is, I guess what you're getting at is if you use it to its full extent, it's got a lot of capability that is untapped,
There's a lot there. It's one of those just kind of sleepers. It seems very, very simple. You know, like I can make it soft or I can make it hard, like large or small, you know, but it goes well beyond that. And especially when you pair it with a pressure sensitive tablet, then then it just really, really opens up worlds.
Yeah, and we've got some codes for the listeners we'll put out in the show notes and at the end of the podcast here for those that want to scoop up some of these pro tutorials over there at FLIRN.
Yeah, so we have a subscription service. So basically, you know, you can get a monthly subscription and watch any of our tutorials on the website. So, you know, you can come and learn about the brush tool, but then you could, you know, learn about frequency separation, compositing, all kinds of really, really cool stuff.
Right on.
It's unlimited streaming. You know, you can watch it from your phone, wherever you're at. It's, yeah, super cool.
Do you guys still run the contest that you used to have back in the day?
We do contests every now and then. We do, yeah, a few different types of contests. These days it's kind of like themed or whatever. You know, we'll run probably a few contests a year. We'll, you know, put them on social media and things like that. We've, I mean, it's been, I don't know, we've had probably hundreds of contests by now. Yeah. So, like, you know, a bunch of different formats and things like that. But which contest were you referring to specifically?
I don't remember. I was like a 3 or 4 time winner of the contest. So I got a bunch of free pro tutorials back in the day. This is like 4 or 5 years ago,
yeah.
But I don't remember. It was like, I don't remember if it was on, if it was on Facebook or if it was, I think it was before Instagram. So it was either just on FLIRN.com or it was on Facebook, but, you just would put a call out for people to submit work and then you guys would review them on, I think it was on YouTube, and then the winners got a sweet pro tutorial. So, you know, the ones.
Yes, yes. Yeah, definitely. We haven't done those in a while. We did like Instagram, you know, contests for a while, and then we've done some like Photoshop competition contests and things like that. But yeah, I think we're due. So thanks for the reminder. We'll do a new contest.
Hey, okay. Cool. So the next question, this one came up in our workshop, and this is why you're on the podcast, because I reached out to you from the workshop live. Somebody had this question.
I didn't respond, by the way.
Yeah. It was a long shot. We figured you might be tied up, but we're in Arizona teaching a workshop. Somebody had a question, and we're like, I don't know. I mean, who would know that? We were trying things. We're like, I bet you Aaron would know. I think somebody actually said that. I bet you Aaron Nace would know. And I'm like, well, let's fucking call him and find out. So I tried to FaceTime you, but you weren't available. So the question was, and Barry may remember better what we were trying to accomplish, but Cole wrote in and asked how to combine effects of blend modes like lighten and luminosity. So we were trying to, do you remember what we were trying to do, Barry?
Yeah, it was, I think we were trying to either mask in light fixtures. I think he wanted to use a blending mode on the layer of like lighten and then a blending mode
or brush
tool for like luminosity or something else. It was like, yeah, it was combining a tool blend mode with a layer blend mode.
Yeah, so luminosity a layer blend mode with like a lighten brush or something like that, but it didn't seem to, you couldn't seem to use them both together.
Or right? Darken brush. It was one of, we were trying to brush in, without creating a mask, we were trying to brush in the luminosity of the lights without affecting the ceiling surrounding it, and he was thinking that we could somehow use a lighten, or a luminosity on the layer and then darken on the brush or something. I don't remember. I don't know.
Got it. Yeah, that's really interesting. So the deal with blending modes for the tools, like the brush tool, is it only works with anything that's pre-existing on that layer. So blending modes with your layers work with all your other layers. So let's say you have like you know, medium green, like you paint green on a layer, and then you change your brush blend mode to lighten, and then you grab a little bit of a lighter green, it's going to change how that green blends in with the other green that was already on that layer. But if there was nothing on that layer, it's going to act like a normal brush.
Gotcha.
Or it's not going to show up at all, depending on the mode that you put in. Also, you could probably go about doing the same sort of thing with like just a couple layers, you know, like get part of your effect done with one layer set to lighten, part of the effect done with another one set to another blend mode, depending on what you were doing.
So is it rare that you would ever use like a certain blend mode with a tool and then a blend mode with a layer? Like, is that something that rarely happens?
You know, not that much. The majority of the time I'm using normal blend modes with most of the tools. There are a couple times when I'm doing like specific clone stamp work. Let's say I'm going to try to like clone stamp in part of like a tree and I only want to get the branches but not the sky behind it, you know, that can be a good time to use like darken blend mode, because I don't want to create a new layer every time I'm going to try to clone stamp, right? So like, you know, mm-hmm. getting just the part of the pattern I want. Other times when I'm refining a layer mask, there's a really cool trick you can use. If you set your brush blend mode to overlay, and so overlay will basically like kind of enhance whatever you're painting. So if an area is like on the light side and you paint with white, it'll just make it brighter. But if something's black and you paint with white, it won't do anything, right? So overlay with your brush tool can be really effective on layer masks if you have like a rough layer mask, like your subject is like light-ish and your background is dark-ish. You can just paint white over your subject and they'll become completely white while not affecting your black background. Mm-hmm. And then you can paint black over your background, which will make it black but not affect your subject. Mm-hmm. And then you got a perfectly cut out subject without doing any of the tracing work. It's, you know, this is why I make videos, because I'm like explaining out loud. I'm like, this is going to make sense to no one.
Well, the people that understand it already, it will help. I mean, the no Photoshop will be able to follow that along. But
right.
Speaking of trees, render trees and render fire. Oh my God. Have you seen this?
Well, I've used it like a couple versions. Oh. Did they change it? Is it new? Is it updated? Is it better?
I didn't know anything about Tony render anything fire. About before, so. Render fire is fucking amazing, dude. It looks, I can set everything on fire in the whole scene now. It's like, it's like Escape from New York on my computer every day.
Yeah, you were jizzing in your pants when it first showed me.
It's amazing. Snake Plissken running down the street. It's amazing. You can do so much. It looks so realistic. Mm. I mean, and for what we do, architecture, photography,
You know, for like fireplaces. This,
yeah,
and stuff.
Dude, you're not going to light somebody's fireplace up when they're, you know, in their house or something. And you know, if you need to put an exterior in where there's normally a fucking, you know, Arby's parking lot or something, with the render trees, being able to put those outside a window and stuff, if you, you know, create your paths. And Barry demonstrated all this in our workshop. It was freaking mind-blowing, the possibilities of these things.
It's cool. Like, you can set the lighting direction for the trees, and then you can, if they're behind the mask, you can just have that thing sliding around like prop hunt and just zipping around outside, changing the pine trees and the damn oak trees and all that stuff.
Like prop hunt. That's exactly what it reminded me of when you were moving that tree around outside the window.
There's a game mode in Call of Duty called Prop Hunt, and it's like a game of hide and seek where you can turn yourself into props, and one of the props happens to be a tree, and Tony and I used to get drunk and play that thing, and we'd be running around hiding. He'd be a bike and I'd be a friggin' oil can or a tree. good times.
Yeah, that's rad. If you've never played Prop Hunt in game or Call of Duty, then to try it.
It's fun.
It's probably the most fun you'll ever have in Call of Duty. It's amazing. I've never even heard and they that. Whistle every, what is it, every 30 seconds or something?
Yeah, every minute they whistle, it's like a giveaway. And then last man standing.
It's like a Marco Polo type of thing. Yeah, it's really cool. So it's fun. Anyway, we got a ton of questions. Let me keep burning through. You okay, Aaron? How you doing, man? You hanging in there?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So 100%. What else do we got? Any upcoming Florin tutorials with interior design editing or color correcting as it relates to architecture photography?
Oh, you know, that's a great question. So I'm just super, super happy with what, you know, kind of like, for those of you guys who don't know, basically, like, the history of Flurn has been a lot of me teaching Photoshop. Mm-hmm. That's the majority of what we've been doing. But we're on, like, a totally, like, new path with, like, bringing and highlighting new instructors and new talent and sharing their talents with the world, which for me is just, like, so much fun. Like, it's been a goal of mine for years and years and years to be able to like really bring other artists into the spotlight. And, you know, we have such a fantastic community that already supports, you know, what we currently do with Flurn. And without them, we wouldn't be able to make this a possibility. So to get to your question, we are going to be bringing in external instructors to teach interiors and architecture and retouching and all that sort of thing. So nice. The answer is yes. I won't be doing it because that's not my specialty. You know, I've never photographed an interior professionally in my life. But because we've spent the last 10 years creating tutorials, basically we bring in the most talented people in their fields and help them create tutorials using our format. So, you know, they don't have to like really, it's easier on the instructors and, you know, yeah. It's a good way for us to share artists' work with the world. So it's, you know, it's a relatively new initiative. We just released last month, we released mobile editing with Elise Swope. She's a fantastic mobile photographer. She shoot everything she shoots is on her phone, and she does all of her editing on her phone. If you guys you can check her out on Instagram, just Swopes, S-W-O-P-E-S. She does some incredible work. She's got clients like Nike and McDonald's. I mean, she's like big cool. time awesome stuff, and everything on her phone. So yeah, it's just we're in a super cool position to be able to like bring in these artists and like really expand the breadth of what we're able to teach, and also like get ahead of these things, because I'm like an old school Photoshop user. Like I'm like, give me a, you know, three monitors and a giant desktop setup and a big tablet and, you know, and all this, like, so to bring in someone who's just editing on their phone is,
that's crazy.
It's just super cool. It honestly just blows my mind. And what could be done.
That goes with what we were talking about earlier about mobile editing and the future of this. Obviously, I mean, if she's doing it now with the tools that are available, I can't imagine what she's going to do in the future. Yeah, we're looking at her stuff now on the,
yeah,
on
I'm
the
looking
big
at
screen.
It as well. It's nuts.
Friggin' nuts, yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. So, you know, and we have a free tutorial on YouTube if anyone wants to check it out, where she actually teaches me how to do compositing on the iPhone. Wow. So it's crazy. We're both in the video. She's super cool, super nice, and, you know, shows me along the way. We're just, like, having fun. But we actually did like a legit composite on the iPhone in the episode. So it's on YouTube for free. I think it's called like Elise Swopes Teaches Aaron Mobile Compositing or something like that.
We'll throw these links in the show notes for sure.
Oh, perfect.
Tony, we just had a question come in hot off the press.
All right. What is it
for Aaron? It says, Aaron, what do you think about the paint bucket tool?
The paint bucket tool.
It's my favorite tool.
I've never used the paint bucket
tool. Oh, most underutilized tool out there, man. That must be it.
That's got to be it. The paint bucket tool. Yeah. Well, I'm just such a, you know, so there's a keyboard shortcut actually that will fill. So you can hit Alt. Yeah. Or Alt or Option Delete. There's a couple keyboard shortcuts that are fill. One will fill with your foreground. One will fill with your background. So, also D, the letter D on your keyboard, will set your default colors, which are black and white. So, if you just want to create a layer mask and do a quick fill with either black or white, you just create a layer mask, hit D, and then your keyboard shortcuts fill with black or white, and then you can Shift F5, and then you can actually choose the color as well. So,
but there's nothing as satisfying as actually clicking on the bucket and clicking on something and watching it fill
in.
It's a
little bucket with a little arrow, and it can fill. It can actually fill things. Well, okay, I get, you know, Command Delete and Option Delete can fill a layer, but if you just want to fill a little spot, you just get that little paint bucket tool. It lives in with the gradient tool.
It's going off the rails. Bring the questions back up. What else we got here? Thoughts on Lightroom versus Capture One. Do you have any experience with Capture One, or are you a through and through Lightroom user?
Yeah, sure. No, I've got experience with Capture One for sure. So Capture One is definitely tailored towards the professional market. This is for digital techs. This is for, you know, people shooting with medium format cameras, people shooting tethered in a studio. And for those applications, I don't think you can really beat it. The raw processing, like software itself, is fantastic. Capture One has a couple of features that Lightroom just doesn't have, and most of those are around tethered capture and creating what's called like recipes in Capture One. So you can set out like export recipes, which are super cool. Basically, you could say like set, you know, this group of folders, I want these group of images, go ahead and export out, you know, 10 versions of these images, you know, at 10 different file sizes, name 10 different types of things, and put them in these folders. Hit one button and it'll do it all for you.
Love it.
Whereas Lightroom, you got to do that all manually. So, yep. Capture One is definitely tailored for the professional market, whereas Lightroom is definitely more for the casual, and even to, you know, from the casual user all the way up to the professional market. I think in terms of accessibility and ease of use, Lightroom definitely wins, and also with integration into Photoshop. But if you're looking for what I would consider to be slightly better raw processing and a little bit more power, then Capture One is definitely the tool to go with.
Cool. You guys heard it from Aaron. That's his thoughts. I echo everything that you say. I use Capture One. And I just, it's not as intuitive as Lightroom. So it takes a little getting used to, but being able to do like the recipes on export, just be able to click the ones you want and hit it rather than in Lightroom, having to go through each one after the other, waiting for each of them to export, or even, you know, having sessions in Capture One where you can just take a whole shoot and move it as a folder and just throw it on an external drive and hand it off to an editor or something. That's pretty cool. You know, Capture One's got a lot of really cool features like Live View. It's 2019 and fucking Lightroom still doesn't have Live View. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Live on their priority list.
Totally. Live View also coupled with onion skinning, which is, basically, what onion skinning does is it allows you to place one image over top of your live view, and you can adjust your opacity and your scaling. Right. So if you're doing compositing, this can be an invaluable tool.
It's huge.
You know, you've got to be tethered, right? You've got to be shooting to a laptop or a desktop setting. So, you know, if you're out in the field, you're kind of running and gunning, it's not going to help in those situations. But if you're in the studio, or if you're able to bring like a little shoot cart with you, or just a tripod with a laptop on it, whatever, it's really going to help out with your compositing. So if anyone is into, you know, like high-end compositing, trying to match camera angles, lighting and things like that, onion skinning and live mode is kind of a game changer.
Yeah, I think they call it overlay in Capture
One. Overlay,
okay. Yeah.
Got it.
And I talked about that in my product tutorial years ago with ProDU, using that. In fact, I didn't use it the way that, you know, a lot of people would use it. Like I have used it for an overlay. Like if I have a magazine cover and I already have the layout of the cover and I'm shooting a product or a food item for that cover, then I can, I'll know exactly where the text and copy is going to be on that cover and the title and everything.
Brilliant.
And so I can bring that up and overlay that on my composition and figure out exactly how I need to compose the shot. In my tutorial, I actually kicked the camera and had to fucking open up overlay because I was shooting a composite, like multiple frames, lighting different parts of the product. And so I had to bring that up and make sure I got everything realigned again. So, you know, it saved my ass there too. But so it has multiple uses, you know, but it is handy. It's a really cool. So that's the thing about Capture One. It has some of those tools that the casual user may not need. And even most professionals probably wouldn't need. But if you are one of those people, it goes the extra mile and it has those extra features that you know, are detrimental to our workflow if it's something that you need that Lightroom doesn't have. So,
100%.
All right, next question. As a retoucher, do you see a benefit in specializing in one niche of work rather than trying to take any paying job that comes your way? Now, obviously, you don't retouch for other people. You're doing FLIRN thing, but what is your opinion on this for people that are learning from you as retouchers? Should they take anything that comes their way or should they specialize?
So I actually do retouch for clients.
Oh.
It's not something that I advertise. It's not something that I, you know, market, you know, actively.
Well, I got a WeTransfer coming your way here as soon as the podcast is over.
I am super duper fortunate in that I get to kind of, you know, work with clients that where it's a fit, you know, and I take a number of, you know, a number of clients each year. And, I really love retouching. It's something that I've spent years and years and years doing. And I think, again, because of my experience with Flurn, you know, the whole keyboard shortcut thing we were talking about, I'm usually able to come in a decent bit under budget because I'm able, I built a workflow that I can do things relatively quickly because of the fact that I've had to teach YouTube tutorials, right? You get to get a lot done in a short period of time. So I actually really love retouching for clients. It's I find it really rewarding, and yeah, I'm happy to do it when, you know, when it's a good fit. So, you know, I, as artists, as, you know, creatives trying to make our way in this world and trying to build careers for ourselves, you know, you get a few different types of clients, right? You get some clients that are just like your dream client. The money is there. The project is cool. The person you're working with is super understanding and you guys are on the same page and all that's fantastic. And obviously we all want just those clients, but you know, sometimes the water heater just broke and you just need to pay the bills. If like something falls on your lap and it might not be the thing that you want to be doing with your life, but you know, it's a job. And I have taken many jobs because, hey, yes, please, I'll do the work. I don't mind staying late extra one night and getting this done because, I need to make ends meet. And, you know, that's not something that I would necessarily put in my portfolio. It's not something that I would like, you know, like actively put out there as to say, like, this is the direction I want to go with my personal career, you know, but if a job is coming my way, I've got the time to do it. I'm just the type of person who's like, I'll work. Sure. Yeah. Like, why not? You know, I don't mind. Now, it's a little bit of a different situation. You know, I wouldn't recommend doing a job where the money doesn't align with what they're asking you to do. You know, if they're trying to really, really undercut your budget, and undervalue your services, then not so much. You know, that's something that no one's going to wind up feeling good after that transaction. You're going to feel like you worked too hard for too little pay. You're going to feel like, oh, am I not worth it? You know, whatever. And the client's going to feel, you know, whatever, like they got a, you know, super good deal, or they like, ah, look at this. I got this for so cheap or whatever. But yeah, if it's good paying work and if it's a fit, personally, I'm like, take the job. Sure. Yeah.
What type of stuff are you, I mean, I don't, maybe you don't want to go down this road, but just curious, sure. What type of retouching are you doing? Is it beauty stuff? Is it product stuff? Is it composite stuff? I mean, what's the main type of stuff that you're doing in your personal retouching stuff for people?
Yeah. Kind of all over. We get a variety of requests. You know, I have like a YouTube channel, so, you know, people will see a YouTube video and be like, oh, this guy knows how to retouch. So we get a variety of requests, you know, and, the stuff that I take these days, it's usually a photographer who's being hired and looking for a retoucher. So, you know, we get requests things like, hey, can you retouch these, you know, pictures that I took of my friend and things like that. And for those, I'm not like, my budget and their budget don't really line up, you know, like that. So those aren't the, you know, I'm not the best person for that job. Like there are other services out there that are a really good fit. I'm usually taking on like mid to higher end commercial clients, things that are going to be in magazines, on billboards, web displays. I've done anything like from editorial to, even created a series of cinemagraphs and like GIFs to run on like mobile ad campaigns and things like that. So yeah, kind of, you know, I don't necessarily market myself towards any specific thing. So, and the only reason why I get any jobs retouching is because again, I've got a YouTube channel, and so people reach out to me.
That's, yeah, it's like reaching out to Bill Gates because you're having a problem with Windows. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna reach out to Aaron and have him retouch my family photos for me. It doesn't make line up sometimes, but
sometimes, you know, sometimes we'll have like a actually like pretty high profile photographer who just needs some like really high end retouching or compositing done. And they reach out to me, or their assistant reaches out, kind of like at a long shot, and it's actually like a pretty good fit. So nice. I've been pretty fortunate with, I've had some really, really great experiences working with those people. So
cool. I didn't realize you were doing that. Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah, I kind of don't really. I don't.
So you're the one sending me all those emails. I am job.
Yeah. Yeah. Work. You say it's please. Me. We say thanks.
It's from Aaron. Yes. You send me work. You say thanks. I am job. And I'm it's Aaron Nace, signature at the bottom.
It's me 100% of the time.
Man, 70 cents a path. It's amazing. I don't know how you're making, how you're making ends meet, Aaron. It's amazing.
I don't sleep much.
Holy crap. We got more. Are there more questions up
That's
there?
That's kind of the last one.
No, we'll bring that up. There's right. more. There's I got more. More. Bring it up. Go back to the beginning.
Go back to the beginning. Here we go. I heard did that okay. one. Okay,
what's one. Underrated? Yep, we got that. Cool. What are your new alternatives challenging Photoshop? Yeah, how about that? Alternatives to Photoshop. So I guess it's probably worth asking because we don't care. It's our podcast. So what kind of a relationship do you have with Adobe? So because this question is, what are your thoughts on the new alternatives that are challenging Photoshop, such as Affinity? And to get an honest answer from you, we kind of need to know where you stand as far as your relationship with Adobe. So
do you have a tattooed on your butt somewhere?
Yeah.
I've got a pretty good relationship, in my opinion, with Adobe. I think they're great. I'd love working with Adobe, actually.
Are you working with Adobe? Are you guys, do you guys have
I'm not on the like salary. I'm not like a paid employee, but I work with them quite a bit. Yeah.
Okay.
Honestly, they're a fantastic company to work with. They take great, great care of their artists. I've always I can't say enough positive things about all my working relationships with Adobe, which is kind of surprising considering the size of company that they are. But they've just above and beyond every time that I've worked with them. So
well, you're Aaron Nace. I don't know if they would do the same thing for Tony Roseland or Barry McKenzie or Chase Warnick, but you're Aaron Nace. When Aaron Nace calls, Adobe has to listen. I mean, you got a lot of influence in the community for that kind of thing, but
they're a big company. They don't really,
So what are your thoughts? We'll let you bypass it. Enough sweating. What is Affinity? What do you think about this? Have you used this? What are your thoughts? I mean, it's a one-time price. I bought it on Black Friday for $35 and
right on.
Fuck man, it's pretty damn good. I mean, it does almost everything that I can do in Photoshop. In fact, they've managed to keep a lot of the shortcuts. Ooh, 1.7 out now. They've managed to keep a lot of the shortcuts and things that I'm familiar with in Photoshop. And I don't know legally how they do all that stuff, but it works pretty freaking well. And I've considered switching before because I technically own the license to this now. I paid for it on Black Friday for $35 instead of every month with Adobe. And so I'm just curious on, well, I guess our other people are too, since this was a question that came in. What are your thoughts on competitors like Affinity?
Yeah, you can never own Adobe anymore.
Yeah, you can. You don't really own anything. I mean, if we're talking about, copyright stuff, so we own a license to it. We don't necessarily own the software. But anyway, what do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, totally. No, I think that these new software suites are fantastic. I really do. There's also a web-based, I don't remember the name of it, but there's a web-based app that is like a Photoshop clone that's also very good. It's like it's free to use. You load it in your browser. Mm. I'll find it for you and I'll text it to you. You can include in the show notes, but like it's browser-based. Wow. So like you don't, there's no install at all. Like, you're just working like in Chrome in your browser. And it's pretty impressive. So I'm actually, I'm happy that these other companies are coming out with what I would consider pretty legitimate competitors to Photoshop, because it's just going to push the industry a little bit farther. You know, Photoshop has been and still is, you know, the go-to piece of software for photo editing, and still will be for a while. What I think these other software suites are going to do are going to kind of push Adobe a little bit farther than maybe they would have on their own. You know, when you're in a competitive market, the businesses tend to compete and the consumers win. When you're in a little bit of a monopoly, like, you know, Photoshop has been for many, many years, there's a little bit less pushing them forward.
There's less incentive for innovation, I think.
Yeah, they get complacent and comfortable, and they don't need to necessarily, you know, innovate as quickly as they would if there's a competitor that's breathing down their neck.
I mean, you're kind of seeing it today with, like, Intel and AMD. AMD kind of was by the wayside for a number of years, and Intel just had the field of everything for 15 years, and they didn't really innovate. Their prices were shit. And then AMD came out with their Zen architecture, and now Intel's going, oh shit, you know, we're in fucking trouble here. We got to do something. So it pushes, I think.
Totally.
Competition pushes.
Fucking geek speak. I don't know what you just said to me. What did you... Is Barry still here? Did he fall asleep?
I think I was talking about capacitors and fucking
his flux capacitor and his AMD and his
chipsets that power all the fucking things you guys use. Jesus,
whatever's in my Mac is what I use. I don't know what you're talking about.
I stare at a glowing screen. I don't care how any of it works as long as it glows.
Yeah, he just diddles his Wacom all day.
Yeah, just twizzle the Wacom and stare at it glowing.
Well, man, I'm looking at Affinity now, and it's on sale for 20% off. So $39 for this piece of software that does a lot. And so obviously Aaron is wed to Photoshop for a while, because he'd have to change the name of the company to something that Flurn with an F. I don't know how he would do this, but a Flurn. I don't know how he would do. So he's stuck with Adobe. But if you're not, you know, Affinity is doing, I have their design software, which is their competitor to Illustrator. I bought that on Black Friday for $35 too. And I only need to be able to open like SVG files and do stuff once in a while, like when I'm having a new t-shirt made or something like that. They want an Illustrator or an SVG file. So I can jump in Affinity and do that
without having to
pay for it every month. Right. Exactly. With Adobe. So it works out great for someone like me, but I would even consider moving to Affinity full time, but there's a couple of small nuances that it doesn't do that we've figured out, like stroking the path. I don't think, right, Barry? Didn't we try to stroke the path in Infinity or in Affinity and it wouldn't work?
Yeah, we couldn't stroke the path.
Yeah, so
sounds like a personal problem.
Are you familiar with stroking the path, Aaron?
I stroked the path. Yeah, so sure. I stroked the path this week doing that retest review. I probably stroked at least 100 paths.
Yeah. So Barry likes to stroke the path, which was a new thing. He's so excited. Every time he does it, he tells me about it. And I'm like, I don't want to hear about you stroking the path anymore. But he's like, look, there's no lines on the side of this building, but watch this. And he makes a path and strokes it. And is like, now you can see the separation between the panels on a building. And I'm like, that's amazing.
No, but that's not even this week. I ran into a thing where I was doing some color work. And then in that gym shot, there was like the like hanging rings. And they were like this like cool like brown wood color, and I was desaturating a bunch of the contamination, and I was like, you know what I'll do? I'll just cut a quick little path, set my brush size, stroke the path on the mask, bam, they pop right back in. I don't gotta do any like free brushing or anything. It's nice. Stroking the path.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It's a beautiful thing. No, man, it's way easier than brushing shit, because I can cut a path and like, man, I'm going to be pen tool battling in India later this year, 5-year-olds.
Well, you and Nace over there are going to be pen tool battling in a bathtub. Well,
no, me and Nace are going to be in the bathtub, yeah, and then I'm going to be over in India.
That sounds like an awesome composite to put together, is Barry and Aaron in a bath, in a bubble bath with their Wacom tablets battling it out. That would be amazing.
Original nibs.
Oh my god!
I just want to get a shirt that says "Original Nibs" on it.
The original, the original nib. An original nib. That's right. Oh my god! Oh. Well, let's see. I think that's all the questions. You got anything, Barry?
I want to talk to Aaron a little bit about the 5D Mark II, because I know that you used that camera for many, many years. No, oh, guys. No, that's not a laughing matter, because Aaron, I know that you have a love for the 5D Mark II. It has a, you have a place in your heart for that beautiful camera.
For sure, yeah. I mean, that I feel like I built my photography career with that camera.
I remember seeing you shooting. You were shooting like a creepy mannequin head with that thing, and you were just lighting it up in the hallway all different directions. And I was like, well, he's got a 5D Mark II. He knows what he's doing.
This was 10 years ago. It's yesterday.
I don't think he's still using it.
He's not using it anymore.
I think Aaron, do you still have a 5D Mark II somewhere?
Yeah, somewhere, yes.
Somewhere. It's in the closet with all his Wacom tablets.
it's not my current camera. But
it's not your A camera.
It's not my A cam, but it's a fantastic camera nonetheless.
Barry has a love relationship with his 5D Mark II. He wishes he was still using it.
It's probably got some sticky buttons on it.
We've pressed him. No, we've pushed him hard enough that he's using the EOS R now. So
wait.
Okay. He's gone mirrorless.
I had the 5D4 as well.
Yeah, but you didn't love it.
It was your B camera, though. Come on.
Yeah, you know
it was
that
my B camera.
You know that was your B camera. Yeah, the 5D2 is still the front runner there.
It was the 5D2 with Lightroom 4 and CS6. That was my jam.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Have you
worked?
I feel like that was a pretty sweet spot too. Like, everything worked. There was no weird updates that everyone was pissed off about. Like
it was only $1,800 every 6 months to upgrade your Photoshop.
It worked so good. The Lightroom 4, CS6 with the 5D2. You knew what you were going to get every time. It was predictable. It was fucking amazing.
I agree. I mean, I've had, yeah, I mean, I change things up pretty frequently these days. I'm shooting with a Sony A7R3, and then I have a Fuji X100F that I take on like personal trips, things like that. And then we have like Canon video cameras, and then some Canon stills as well. So yeah, these days it's kind of like, you know, whatever. Just kind of like whatever the current new, like, quote unquote, good camera is.
Well, you got to check out the EOS R then, because that's what Barry and are both using. And we've talked about it on this podcast several times. We both love the thing. I'm a former Sony user myself, but I think the EOS R is better. I won't go into all the reasons why. You and I can chat one day over beers or something with that, but. Or you're welcome to go back and listen to our podcast.
I will. Yeah, let's hook me up.
But it's a great camera, man. I think you dig it. It does a lot of the same stuff that the Sony's do, but personally, I think better, and with the menu system and controls that you're familiar with already. So if you're a Canon shooter, it was a nice thing, and they really entered the market strong with this camera. Obviously, Sony's had the lead on mirrorless for a little while now because they've just been pushing innovation. Everybody else has been playing catch up, and we were curious to see what Canon would enter with, Canon and Nikon actually. And they both came out of their corners pretty strong with their mirrorless introductions. And I'm curious to see where it goes from here. Now the race is on. Now all the companies get to battle and kind of push each other. It's going to be fucking epic. So,
and we win.
Yeah, we win. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
cool. Well, I'll check it out. That's super cool. So yeah, these days, you know, I'm like, it's kind of funny. I don't really call myself a photographer really anymore. I'm basically like a full-time instructor, and you know, like my primary focus right now is bringing new talent in and helping them share their gifts with the world. So,
nude? Did you say nude talent?
NEW.
Oh, okay. Oh. Sorry. I thought you said nude talent. I was going to submit my application. Yeah. All right.
We'll do that off camera.
All right.
Well, I'm always open to nude talent as well.
Sometimes the camera's nice, though. I don't know. I mean,
nude Photoshop tutorial now featuring on Flurn.
Hey, there's no way for us to know if you're wearing pants there on Flurn, and we can't tell.
I've definitely not worn pants many times.
I would.
That's amazing. Oh,
we have a secret trick because we the room that we record in, so we just built a new studio recently, and you know, we use a lot of lights to make it look good on camera, and it gets hot in there. So one of the little hacks that I do in the summertime when it's already really hot is I'll like fill a giant bucket of ice and put it under the table and put my feet in it while I'm recording. So I'm like barefoot with my feet, like, you know, ankle deep in a bucket of ice, like just strolling through my compute, you know, like 85 degrees in this room. And I'm just like, totally fine.
Is that because you have to turn the HVAC off, or why don't you just turn the air conditioning on? Is it the noise from the HVAC?
For the sound, yeah.
Yeah, we got the same problem here. It's off right now here, too. We have to go through.
It sounds very much like the studio at Pro EDU that we recorded.
Yeah, except we didn't get a bucket of ice. We just sweat our balls off.
I took my shoes off.
Oh, my God. It was horrible. Hey, so are you in the same place, Aaron, that you were at when I was last out there, and that... gosh, it's been years now. You had an amazing sound system in your office. You had your own little office, and you had just gotten the Sonos Faber speakers and the turntable set up that was freaking out of this world, dude. It inspired me, and I came home and bought a turntable, and I couldn't afford the Sonos Fabers because, you know, they're really pricey.
They're silly.
But I got a pair of B&Os, and they're pretty sweet. Yeah. But do you still have that set up in your office?
So the overall studio we still have, the overall studio space, but it's very, very different from the time you were here. So I no longer have an office. We're all just kind of – it's an open workspace. So we all – you know, everyone is just kind of like – there's a giant cluster of desks, and we all just kind of like hang out and do our things. Yeah, just like a chance to be a little bit closer with, you know, everyone who works here. That what used to be my office is now like a gear storage room. So everything photography related is tucked away. So if you actually came to the studio right now and looked around, you'd have no idea that it was a photography or a video studio, because literally all of our equipment is completely tucked away. It only comes out during use. So the main space itself is more, I would say it's a half like living area. I mean, no one lives here, but it kind of looks like you could live here if you wanted. And then half of it is like working area.
Wow. So you guys, every time you do a video, you break out everything and set it up fresh, huh?
So we have a whole other room. So we built out a whole studio just for recording videos. And that's like off to the side. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like 10,000 square feet room, but like it's its own tucked away thing. So,
well, your space was big. I remember it being a huge space. So,
yeah, we've got a pretty great space here. The thing that I love the most about the space, honestly, is the plants. We've got a bunch of plants because we're in Chicago. For anyone who maybe, you know, Chicago fans out there, so we've got a bank of windows that's I don't even know, a few hundred feet long, facing east, facing downtown. So we've got a view of the skyline. And we've got great, great light here. And I'm a huge, just like really big plant enthusiast. So we've got probably a few hundred plants here at the studio, you know, ranging from little small cactuses to giant trees. And I really love hanging out with all these plants.
A few hundred plants?
Just got a full-time horticulturist, like hanging out on staff, just watering plants.
How can you feed Miracle-Gro to these plants? Do you give them a lot of Miracle-Gro?
Zero Miracle-Gro.
Barry's interested.
Yeah, have you not seen the Super Bloom formula that the Miracle-Gro provides? I mean,
I can't tell if you're being serious.
No,
are you working at Lowe's?
Barry's a huge horticulturist.
I'm like a lawn care like garden nerd.
Great.
So I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I like to nurture this shit and watch it grow. And man, Miracle-Gro. It's not. It's like black magic, dude. It should be illegal what it does.
I'll check it out.
It's not new, man. I'm surprised you haven't heard of it yet. I mean, it's out there. It's in the yellow bin. You can get like a nice big super pack down at Lowe's or something. And
what is this called?
Some of those Miracle-Gro.
Yeah, I've heard of Miracle-Gro, but what's this new formula you're talking about?
It's like the Super Bloom, man.
Oh my God. Does it have those big white, like they look like styrofoam balls in it when you put them in the pot?
No, it's like this, like blue. It looks like the meth. If you took the meth on Breaking Bad and like turn it into a powder, that's what it looks like.
That's amazing.
Are there any human remains in that thing?
There might be, man. There might be some crushed up bones. Who knows? And I think bones make plants grow as well.
Here in Washington State, it's now legal to use human remains in compost.
Oh. Is that true?
Oh. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
I was actually, this is, while we're on the topic of human composting, I was watching this thing on Vice News the other day, and they were talking about body farms. And apparently if a body's decomposing in a field, when it completely decomposes, it will kill the grass, like almost like it was set on fire. And then within like 6 months or a year, that spot will be like the most lush, ridiculous thing in the whole field. Just a little quick fact for you guys out there.
That's amazing.
Hands-on experience with this, Barry?
Well,
that's why he's always so concerned about his lawn.
Yeah.
he's got a bunch of bodies buried out there.
It's like the Burbs, man. It's like the Clopex.
Well, okay, so we're at an hour and a half. We probably ought to try to wrap it up here. But before we move on to Barry's bookshelf, we got to ask Aaron, what's on your home screen, man, of your phone? What apps are on your home screen? We want to know. The inquiring minds want to know what apps are on your home. What makes it to the home screen? This tells us a lot about a person. Like Barry, for example, has Domino's and McDonald's apps on his home screen. So we know what kind of person he is. And I wouldn't surprise me if he has the Miracle-Gro app on there at this point. But
I don't have one yet. I looked.
What's on your home screen, Aaron? What apps are on there? What makes it to your home screen?
Oh boy. Well, I've got a Headspace on my home screen right now, which is like a meditation app.
All
right. Kind of fun. It's like guided meditations. I've just got a bunch of the regular one, and I've got a lot of money, finance, business stuff on here. Some like foreign language, learning apps, a bunch of communication apps, and, some communication app like WhatsApp, you know, so I can chat with some international folks and
no Papa John's.
I haven't had Papa John's in probably 11 years.
Are you still vegan, Aaron?
I am, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so no Papa John's. They don't have vegan cheese.
Well, maybe they don't have. Do Papa John not have an offering for the vegan?
No, they don't have the vegan cheese.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I used to come to Chicago and hit up Aaron and be like, okay, where do I go to eat, man, when I was a vegan? And he'd be like, okay, you got to go down there to Native, and you got to go here and there and all the places.
Totally.
So, speaking of which, my wife will be out later in the year for the Chicago Marathon, so you and I are going to connect for sure, man. Yeah, I'll hit you up when I'm out. We'll hang out for sure.
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah, it'd be great to hang out. Yeah, I've been cooking a lot lately, which is just so much fun. It's you know, just kind of like a excuse to, I don't know, just like, get, you know, exactly what your
food.
Yeah. Get your hands in your food. You know, what's in your food. And, I find that I can, you know, just in a couple minutes, make something that's just like super fresh, super nutritious. And, you know, pretty dirt cheap. I mean, I just like kale and like rice, like, you know, it costs like $2 and, you know, you spice it with some, you know, some nice things in it. I mean, I think it tastes good anyway, so.
I think it tastes great.
You should go vegan.
Do you grow your own, like, me?
Yeah, you.
I can't go vegan.
Yeah, you can. They make veggie pepperoni and cheese for your pizzas, man.
He'll never do it. There's no way.
I can't do it.
I'll make you a vegan pizza when you come up here next.
Chase probably okay. He probably does a pretty good one.
If you make a vegan pizza, I'll just order Domino's and then pretend.
Oh, this is good.
Tastes like cardboard. Yay. Well, hey, so let's, Aaron, where can the world find you on the World Wide Web if they want to know more about Flurn or Aaron Nace?
Yeah, so, you know, Flurn.com. It's PHLEARN, like photography, Photoshop, learn. That's kind of our home base. We have hundreds and hundreds of free tutorials on Flurn.com, as well as pro tutorials, which you can get for we have like a subscription platform. So you just pay like, you know, boop, 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 and then you get to access everything. And then we also have like really awesome downloads. We've got Great Photoshop actions, Lightroom presets. We just launched an entire pack of LUTs, which are used for color grading in Photoshop, Lightroom, and even for video. So all kinds of really great things. And then if you're on YouTube, we have a YouTube channel just to learn as well. So yeah, that's the best place to connect with us. And I believe, Tony, you've got some coupons to give out, right? Some coupons.
Yeah, we got a, your people called My People, which is me. I don't have people except for Chase. And gave a code of Pixel20 with a capital P, and that gets 20% off of subscriptions over at Flurn. So what? If anybody's interested, they can get 20% off.
Awesome.
So I'll put that in the show notes as well, so that they can follow that along with all the other stuff we've talked about. And I think it's time for Barry's bookshelf. What do you got, Barry?
I don't know, man. I feel like going to Barry's dusty record shelf today just because I've been cooped up retouching all week and my brain doesn't function so well.
All right, so I got one then. On the books, I finished Ultra Marathon Man, and I've moved on to his second book, which is called Run, also a New York Times bestseller. And it's basically 26.2 stories of blisters, burns, whatever. It's basically just anecdotes about him running. And so it's inspired me, and I think I want to do an ultra. I'm going to try to do a 50K in September, which is 31 miles. So I've never run a marathon or anything else, so I'm going to go harder and longer and see if I can just jump right into ultra marathoning.
Have you ever read the book Born to Run?
No, I haven't read that.
It's a really good book. I read it once. It's a
Was that by Terry Fox?
No, it's by Christopher McDougall.
Oh.
And it's about his transition into barefoot running.
Oh, that sounds extremely painful. Like running in shoes is painful enough. I can't imagine barefoot running.
Well, that's what your fucking feet were designed over tens of thousands of years that shit.
I will look into it for sure. See if they have it on Audible. But,
it is
before Audible. Before I forget, I had one question for Aaron, and I've always been curious. I know that you guys recently passed 1 million subscribers on YouTube, so congrats on that. That's insane.
Thank you.
How heavy is that damn thing, the play button that you get? Is it like, I'm picturing that thing to be as heavy as like a 25 pound dumbbell. Like, is it heavy?
Yeah. Well, it comes like framed, you know, like there's like a aluminum frame for it. I would say it's like 18, well, no, it's like more like 11
pounds?
Inches by 18. 18 inches.
Oh
pounds.
I thought he was going to say 18 pounds. I was like, damn.
18 pounds, yeah.
I weighed it.
I'm pretty sure it's a piece of plastic with a foil wrap around.
Dude, you should bust that out of there and make a belt buckle out of it and just walk around with your 1 million subscriber belt buckle.
Is it real? I was picturing it to be like a solid like metal billet with the little stamp.
Me too.
It's just a piece of like spray painted plastic.
It's tin foil.
Well, it doesn't exactly look like spray painted. It looks like a foil wrap, you know? I mean, it's in a frame. I don't plan on breaking the frame and seeing what's in there exactly, but... we're actually... I think we're at 1.8 now.
Jesus.
Good Lord.
On YouTube.
Good God. That's what 8 years of tutorials does for you, man. That's amazing.
What's
Congrats, Aaron.
What's the next prize? Is it 10 million you get the next one? Or what's the next benchmark?
Yeah, it's 10 million. You get the diamond play button.
Ooh, next year.
Oh. And it's just like, it's the spray painted plastic with like a...
Yeah, like a slightly paddle. Different. Yeah, they use different spray paint.
That's amazing.
And sparkles in it, yeah.
Oh, all right, Barry, what's your dusty record collection of the week?
Oh, man. The only one I can see right now is a classic. It's a hip hop record that comes from, I think, the early 2000s. It was a group out of Oxnard, California called The Loop Pack. And the producer is Madlib, who probably some people, anybody who knows music will know who Madlib is. He's one of the best producers ever. But there's DJ Roams is the DJ, and the other MC is Wild Child. It's called Loop Pack. I actually have a triple vinyl that was signed by them because I opened up for them at a show in Ottawa. Oh. So check it out on Spotify,
B-Swizz,
man.
B-Swizz on the track.
I did. Actually, this reminds me. I did an impulse buy today. So I've been watching Genius on YouTube, Rap Genius, and they deconstruct hip-hop beats, and they show how they're made. And back when I was a DJ, I used to make beats as well. And then today I impulse bought an Akai MIDI controller and an Akai keyboard. So I'm going to start making some beats in my spare time.
Nice. You can make an intro for the podcast, dude.
That's what I'm hoping to do, man.
Nice. Well,
that's so cool.
Chase, where can the world find you, man?
Instagram and Twitter, Chase_Warnick, both of them.
All right. Barry?
You can find me on Instagram, SWIZZLER.
Right on. And I am Tony Roseland on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, which we're getting ready to fire up again here soon, real quick. Aaron, man, thank you very much for your hour and 40 minutes. We really appreciate you being on the podcast, brother. I know people are super psyched to listen to this one based on all the questions we got. So congrats on all your success with FLIRN, and thank you very much for the discount code for our listeners. And anything else you want to say to listeners before we cut out of here?
Thanks so much. And, you know, Chase and Barry and Tony, it's been a fantastic podcast. I've had so much fun. Thanks so much for inviting me. And for the listeners out there, you know, just keep doing what you love and stay consistent with it, and good things will come of it.
Right on. Thanks, Aaron. And thanks for everybody listening to episode 9. We'll catch you on the next one. We'll be right back.